I invite you to take your New Testaments and turn to Romans chapter 15. And then if you could place your markers to 1 Corinthians 10, we'll just read two short verses to get an introduction into our lesson. But it's good to see everyone here this morning. I hope you had a good week last week. So thankful for our visitors who's come out to be with us. And if you have any questions or concerns about the things that we teach and that we practice here, I'd be more than happy to sit down with you and discuss those concerns. And I know that there's other men here who's willing to do the same. But it is good to see everyone out. And as you can tell from the slide title, The Sin of Nadab and Abihu, that's going to be our primary text this morning. But we need to understand that the Old Testament, it has value for us as Christians. It has great value at that. It's written for our learning. It's written for our admonition. We see it here in Romans 15 and verse 4. For whatever was written in earlier times was written for our instruction, so that through perseverance and through the encouragement of the Scriptures, we might have hope. And I don't know if you've ever sat down and talked with any people who maybe they struggle with religion, they struggle with the idea or the thought of Christianity, and sometimes people tend to view the God of the Bible in two senses, the God of the Old Testament and then the God of the New Testament. Well, let me give you a short answer to that. The God of the old is still the God of the new. He's the same. He's never changed. He may change of how His interactions were with His people, with His followers, with His disciples. He may have changed instead of instantly punishing them, giving instant consequence for sin. And now we have to live with the fact that for the wages of sin is death. Well, just because you sin, that doesn't promise a physical death. But we've been promised a physical death, Hebrews 9:27. We all will die unless the Lord comes first. But we will all taste death. But that's not talking about spiritual death. That's talking about physical death. For the wages of sin is death. That's talking about spiritual death. That's talking about spiritual separation from God for all eternity. That's the type of death that we have to live with and in if we're not right with God. And so these instructions that we have from the Old Testament are good things to look at to see, how does God view sin? How does He view people who do not revere Him? How does He handle or address the problem of the lack of respect, where they do not regard Him as holy? They do not respect His presence. And so that's what we're going to see and talk about this morning with the sin of Nadab and Abihu. Go over to 1 Corinthians chapter 10 real quick. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. And start at verse 6. Now these things happened as examples for us, so that we would not crave evil things as they also craved. So He's talking about those of the past. He's talking about the children of Israel. He's talking about the likes of, you know, the story of Adam and Eve, the stories of Cain and Abel. He's talking about like the tribe of Judah, who had the perfect example of Israel, and how they were taken and essentially wiped out because of their unfaithfulness, because of their disobedience. And the tribe of Judah just kept right along in their sin, in their harlotry, in their idolatry. And so they were told, hey, you're about to go into captivity. so that we will not crave the evil things as they also craved. Do not be idolaters as some of them were. So as we see, these Old Testament teachings and passages, there's tons of value because it explains to us the nature of God and the nature of how He's going to deal with those who sin and do not obey Him. Do not be idolaters as some of them were, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and stood up to play. Nor let us act immorally as some of them did, and 23,000 fell on one day. Nor let us try the Lord as some of them did, and were destroyed by the serpents. Nor grumble as some of them did, and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now these things happened to them as an example, and they were written for our instruction, upon whom the end of ages have come. So they're written to be a great source of hope for us. But it's also written to be admonition for us, so that we don't do the same similar things that they did, make the same mistakes. Because we know, for those who do not learn from the past, learn from history, what are they doomed to do? To repeat it. To do the same thing that's been going on. There's nothing new under the sun. There's not new sins. It's all the same thing. And I've been saying it here recently. I've been teaching it in the high school class now that I've started in there. Pride is at the center of all sins. And we need to really look at that and consider that in our lives. But let's think about the circumstances leading up to the sin of Nadab and Abihu. Let's go back to Leviticus, if you will. And for the most part, we will be here in Leviticus chapter 10 and obviously chapter 9. Now, in chapters 8 and 9... the circumstances leading up to the actions of Nadab and Abihu is that you had the consecration of Aaron and his sons as priests. And so that has just been completed. We see that here in Leviticus 9, verse 22 and 24. Then Aaron lifted up his hands toward the people and blessed them. And he stepped down after making the sin offering and the burnt offering and the peace offerings. Moses and Aaron went into the tent of meeting, and when they came out and blessed the people, the glory of the Lord appeared to all the people. And then fire came out from before the Lord and consumed the burnt offering and the portions of fat on the altar. And when all the people saw it, they shouted and fell on their faces. And so I want us to see and note here that fire is utilized by the Lord. And so this fire comes out from before the Lord. It comes out from the presence of the Lord. And that fire consumes the fat on the altar. It consumes everything there. And the people, they fell and they shouted because of this action. Because of everything that's taking place here. But then we have here in Leviticus 10, verse 1 and 2. So just continuing on. Now Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, took their respective fire pans, and after putting fire in them, placed incense on it and offered strange fire before the Lord, which He had not commanded them. Did you notice that? They offered something that He had not commanded them. And I want you to think about, I don't want our minds to wander too far right now in this very moment, but think about all of the different buildings, the different places that people are meeting at this morning. How many of them are offering things that God had not commanded them? This is a very serious charge. This is not something that I take lightly. This is not something that I enjoy thinking about. But this is a very spiritual reality that we need to think about. And this concerns all things in our lives, not just the actions of our worship, but the actions of our everyday lives need to be considered. Place incense on it and offer strange fire before the Lord, which He had not commanded them. And fire came out from the presence of the Lord and consumed them, and they died before the Lord. There are several different translations here in reference to this. I use the New American Standard. It says strange fire. The King James, New American Standard, and the Old American Standard utilizes strange fire. The New King James renders it profane fire. The New Living Translation says the wrong kind of fire. It's more of a, you know, I don't know if you know much about different translations, but you have word-for-word translations, which are kind of like more literal translations, and then you have like the thought-for-thought translations, which are kind of paraphrasing. And so that's more like what that is, the New Living Translation. I would not suggest reading out of it, but as I was doing the translation comparisons, I was like, that's still a pretty good idea, though. They offered the wrong kind of fire. Just as, let me just step off on a limb for just a moment. There are people that are offering the wrong kind of worship this morning. We know it. And many of them know it. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't take it seriously. Many of them have the same attitude as Nadab and Abihu. Now, some of this I have to kind of be subjective and maybe step off on a limb and just assume. But it's not a far stretch. Because again, the actions leading up to all this was essentially the big giant party that they had, the consecration, the separating of them, of being made priests. And now all of a sudden, as soon as that's done, as soon as the fire of the Lord comes down and consumes the fat upon the altar and the people fall down and they shout, all of a sudden this transpires? I mean, that's just, I mean, that there wasn't even a blink of an eye. And they're already offering up something that He had not commanded them. The English Standard, and this is one that might surprise you, the NIV, the New International Version, it and the CSB, the Christian Standard Version, says unauthorized fire. This is like the one time I'll ever pat NIV translators on the back. I think they got it exactly right. Unauthorized fire. And then the Revised Standard Version renders it unholy fire. So we've got strange fire, we have profane, we have wrong kind of fire, we have unauthorized fire, we have unholy fire. But it's important to note that this was something that He had not authorized, that He had not commanded them. And fire comes out from the Lord. Just as fire came out from the presence of the Lord previously and consumed the fat upon the altar, fire comes from the presence of the Lord and consumes Nadab and Abihu. And they died before the Lord. So think about these fires for just a moment. Luke in Leviticus 9:24, that fire indicates acceptance. It indicates blessings. Right? You can think about Cain and Abel. Cain offered a sacrifice and it was essentially rejected. It was not an acceptable sacrifice. Abel offers up an acceptable sacrifice. Here it's the same thing. You have in Leviticus 9:24, God accepted this sacrifice and their practices because that's what He commanded them to do. But all of a sudden now, this very same fire from the same source That's what we need to consider. From the same source, the fire that blesses is also the fire that curses. And I want us to understand that there's no discrimination amongst the blessings and the curses. We just need to make sure that we're standing on the right side of things. We're told in Romans 2:11, for there is no partiality with God. None. God's not a respecter of persons. The very same people that He had just accepted and blessed are the same people now, not all of them, but a few of them, a couple of them, mainly two, they decide to step out on a limb and say, you know what, we're going to do this our way. And what does God do? He rejects them. Instead of offering blessings, now He's offering curses. So why was God displeased? This is what we need to actually consider. Why was He displeased? Now, this is typically what you're going to see from people. So let's do a quick Bible study. Let's go over to Leviticus chapter 16. And just to save on time, we're going to kind of... You see there at the bottom, we see their attempt to enter the holy place at an inappropriate time. They, you know, people say that this is why. And they want to try to suggest it was one problem and not the other. I submit to you that the problem was all three of these things. The problem was the fact that they offered something that He had not commanded them. That was the problem. And it includes all of these things. So Leviticus chapter 16, look at verse 1 and 2. Now the Lord spoke to Moses after the death of the two sons of Aaron, when they had approached the presence of the Lord and died. So yes, this was part of the problem. There is no doubt. But it's not the only part of the problem. You might recognize this type of argument in reference to the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. What is it that most people think about when you think about the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah? Well, most of the time people think about the homosexuality, the sexual immorality aspect of the sin. But then you've got some people who they struggle with that idea and they want to teach this idea that God accepts and welcomes all forms of relationships, heterosexual or homosexual. And they say, well, it wasn't their homosexuality that was the problem. It was their lack of hospitality. It's like, really? You're really that dishonest into saying that? Nobody denies the inhospitality aspect of Sodom and Gomorrah, but we clearly know and can read that the reason why they were doomed was because they were inhospitable and because of their sexual perversion. There's nothing we can take out of that. And that's what people want to do. And that's what people want to do here with the sin of Nadab and Abihu. When you take them to Leviticus 10 and verse 1, it says that they offered that strange fire which God had not commanded them. And people want to say, no, that's not really why. Absolutely it is the reason why. The Lord said to Moses, tell your brother Aaron that he shall not enter at any time into the holy place inside the veil before the mercy seat which is on the ark, or he will die. For I will appear in the cloud over the mercy seat. So yes, this was actually one of the problems. But it's not the only reason for the problem. Drop down to verse 11 and 12 here in Leviticus 16. Then Aaron shall offer the bull of sin, of the sin offering, which is for himself, and make atonement for himself and for his household. And he shall slaughter the bull of the sin offering, which is for himself. He shall take the fire pan full of coals of fire from upon the altar before the Lord, and two handfuls of finely ground sweet incense, and bring it inside the veil. And so some of the excuses that I've heard and that I've studied over, this is one of them, that the coals were not from the altar. And so that's why God didn't accept their fire. And I submit to you, absolutely, that is one of the reasons, but that's not the only reason. You go right back to Leviticus 10 and verse 1, which he had not commanded them. See, the problem is we want to play word games with people. And we want to try to play word games with God. Now, I'll tell you, Nadab and Abihu would tell you, don't do that. If they could, they would say, big mistake. Don't try to fight against God. But that's exactly the problem. Go back to chapter 10. And this is probably the most predominant excuse or argument that I've heard that's against their charge, against Nadab and Abihu, is the idea, well, the reason why God killed them was because they were drunk. And you know what? Sometimes people do really stupid things, and you have to really stop and consider, was this person drunk when they did this? So I'm not saying that this isn't maybe part of the case. But what I'm telling you is that the Scriptures reveal to us that it's not the only reason why God struck them dead and consumed them by fire. And it is completely, intellectually dishonest for you to argue that case. The only reason why people argue this is because when you start to toe the line and say, okay, how should we offer worship to God? In spirit and in truth? Just as He's commanded? Or should we just offer what we feel like at the time? What we want, what we desire? Is the excuse now that, well, as long as we're drunk, we can have an orchestra, we can have a rock band up here? Is that going to be our excuse? What it boils down to is people have no shame. And they're prideful. And they are going to do what they want to do, irregardless of what the truth of the matter is. And it's okay. They can do what they want to do. But what we want to do here is we want to provide a book, chapter, and verse foundation for all the things that we do, for all the things that we practice, the things that we teach, the things that we preach. And if we can't provide a book, chapter, and verse, because here's the thing, God's not the author of confusion. We do not have to be confused about these things. Yet man, it starts to interject his thoughts. Well, I think that it could be. Your I think so's are not book, chapter, and verse. I suppose it could be. There's no I suppose chapter 1, verse 1. There's none of that. So supposing is not going to work. We look here at verse 8, here in Leviticus 10. The Lord then spoke to Aaron, saying, do not drink wine or strong drink, neither you nor your sons with you, when you come into the tent of meeting, so that you will not die. It is a perpetual statute throughout your generations, and so as to make a distinction between the holy and the profane, and between the clean and the unclean. And so as to teach the sons of Israel all the statutes which the Lord has spoken to them through Moses. So here you have an example. People say, well, see, that's why God killed them. It's because they were drunk. No, you go back to verse 1. After putting fire in them, placed incense on it, and offered strange or unauthorized fire before the Lord, which He had not commanded them. Their sin was a combination of all of these things, not just one without the other. Verse 1 tells us clearly They offered something that he had not commanded them. And then Moses actually gives us an explanation for what happened, actually. You see there in verse 3? Then Moses said to Aaron, "It is what the Lord spoke, saying," look at this, "by those who come near me." So he's talking about Nadab and Abihu. And actually, really, in the grand scheme of things, he's talking about everyone. Bigger picture. "By those who come near me, I will be treated as holy." That's by everybody. And so therefore, the premise is, and the understanding is that if we will not treat Him as holy when we approach God in our lives and in our, whether it's, you want to call it spirituality, whether you want to call it your worship, whatever you want to call it, in all things in your life, if you do not treat Him as holy, He will reject you. This is what Moses explains is the problem. They did not treat Him as holy. He says, "And before all the people, I will be honored." So Aaron, therefore, kept silent. Aaron couldn't even grieve the death of his sons. And I mean, this was a joyous occasion for them. They had just been consecrated as priests. This was a joyful moment. And all of a sudden, because of their sin, because of their wickedness, because of their behavior, that they did not honor God, they did not treat Him as holy, they suffered the consequences for their actions. And Aaron has to remain silent. He can't fight it. It had to have been difficult for him. Their actions prove that they did not respect or honor God. And so we bring that to 2023. And you've got all these different churches. And they all say, "Well, we worship the same God you worship." Yeah, that's what you affirm. That's your assertion. You assert that, but without proof. Because by the way you worship, by the way you conduct your lives, it's not evident. This is not me looking down my nose at people saying that I'm perfect, that I have it all figured out. This is me encouraging you all to figure it out. Read your Bibles. Study it. Learn of God. And obey Him. Because this is one of the many examples that we have in the Old Testament that shows us that God needs to be viewed as holy and He needs to be respected in all ways. And if we do not view Him as holy and we do not honor Him in our lives, think about what Jesus said in Matthew 10. I believe it's Matthew 10 around verse 32, verse 33. When he talks about, "If you won't confess me before men, neither will I confess you before my Father who is in heaven." The words of Jesus, not mine. I mean, I paraphrased it, but that's what he said. So people can try to explain away why Nadab and Abihu, why they believe Nadab and Abihu was killed. We see it within the context. They offered something that was not commanded of them, and Moses says that they did not treat God as holy, and they did not honor Him. Think about us. Think about ourselves, our worship. This is not a lesson on a cappella, instrumental music, Lord's Supper. But you need to think about these things. Are we offering what God has commanded? And you may be sitting there saying, "Well, preacher, God, there's nothing in the New Testament that says do not play, do not do this, do not do that." Since when do you need a "thou shalt not" in order to know that it's wrong? There's nothing in the New Testament that ever teaches us to view it that way. Go over to Ephesians chapter 5 real quick. Ephesians chapter 5. Just so you can kind of see the point that I'm getting. Ephesians 5 verse 19. Speaking to one another in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. Singing and making melody in your hearts. Or with your heart to the Lord. Speaking and singing, making melody with your heart. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to understand this, and I'm very basic in English, but I'm pretty sure speaking does not require one to play. Singing does not beg, does not require, does not force us to draw the conclusion that we must play an instrument. And if that be the case, then how come everyone that's in these audiences, that's in these pews, why are they not also playing and making a joyful noise? Why are they sitting on their rears doing nothing while only a select few worship God? You tell me. It's because they do not treat God as holy and they do not honor Him. We need to think about our worship. We need to think about our priorities. We need to think about our lives. Do we respect Him? Do we honor Him? Do we fear Him? Do we love our brethren enough? Not just our brethren. Do we love our neighbors enough to be willing to share these truths with them, even though they may be hard for some? Do we care enough for the souls of others to recognize that if we have the attitude and the behavior and the disposition of Nadab and Abihu, no, God's probably not going to strike us dead right here, right now. Fire's not going to be coming out of the heavens and striking you dead as soon as you commit the sin. But if you die while in your sin, if you die while not treating Him as holy and not honoring Him, that sin will be on your account for all eternity. For all eternity. We need to regard God as holy. We need to glorify Him in all things. We need to put our desires, our wants, our wishes aside. And when it comes to our worship, when it comes to how we live our lives, we need to consider God in all things. Whatever decision it is that you're about to make this morning as you get ready to walk out these doors, which I know, obviously, because of timing, most people will be thinking, okay, we're going to go to McDonald's, Taco Bell, Roma's, Pepito's, right? We're going to be making those simple decisions. But what about the decisions on how we're going to treat our spouse? What about our decisions on how we're going to raise our children? What about our decision when we're thinking about someone who may be struggling and having a hard time and we know it? We're going to decide to reach out and encourage that individual, or we're just going to say, they'll figure it out. See, it's those types of decisions that we have to really consider this morning. Not just the where to eat, but how we live our lives. Because if we don't, we're not regarding God as holy, and we're not glorifying Him in all things. We need to be reminded of these kinds of incidents. Cain and Abel, Nadab and Abihu. So that we can humble ourselves in the presence of God and to remind ourselves of the seriousness of what it means to serve Him. Here in just a moment, we're about to be singing the invitation song, In the Desert of Sorrow and Sin. This morning, each and every one of you has an opportunity to respond to the gospel call. For some of you, you've never responded. You've never obeyed. And that's okay. I'm not judging you. But if you know that God is real, you believe in His Word, you believe in Jesus, and you confess Him before men, and you're willing to repent of your sins and be buried with Him in death, put Christ on in baptism to be raised to walk in newness of life, to have your sins washed away, we want to help you do that this morning. If you need to study with somebody before making that decision, my door is always open. If you're here this morning, you've already done that, but you recognize that sin is present in your life and you need to be restored. You desire the prayers of the congregation or to talk to someone.